I feel like I forgot, like I lost my learning skills, my text skills.
Okay, so this is a good time to sort of a refresher.
Okay.
So we're on Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph.
I might have to leave in the middle.
Whenever you have to go, Alan, you go. You know, I always tell everybody this is not a jail. This is adult education. You know? Okay.
I'm an adult.
So on Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. Yeah, we'll get the door closed in a minute. I'm hoping that maybe Brian and Max will show up. Daniel's already abroad. Aaron Attar is abroad.
He's in Atlanta.
Atlanta, yeah. Aaron is in Atlanta.
He's there for a while.
Okay. So what do we have? We are up to the beginning of the wide lines here on Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. And if you take a look at the second of the wide lines, we're up to the word Lememra. Well, what do we know until this point, up until Lememra? We know the following. That two gentlemen come into Beis Din, and each one claims he's a Kohen. We don't know that they're Kohanim, and they have to establish themselves as Kohanim, primarily teach Truma. And for that, Rabbi Yehuda says, we need an objective testimony. I can't testify about myself. I'm not believed on myself to say I'm a Kohen. What happens if each one testifies on the next one? So you've got Reuven and Shimon coming into Beis Din, and each one says, I'm a Kohen, and he's a Kohen. So at least we have one objective witness on the other fellow. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's not good enough. And the Chachamim say that's fine. So we thought, when we got together last week, I shouldn't bring up mistakes that we made in the past, but we made a mistake, and we thought that the whole debate here revolves around the following question. What's the status of Truma? Do we view Truma like all Isurim, and therefore one witness is believed? We have a principle called Eid Echad Ev Bisurim. Or do we say no, that Truma, because of the severity of Truma, we upgrade the requirement of testimony from one Eid to two Eid? But the Gemara has a different explanation. The Gemara says that fundamentally, even Rabbi Yehuda disqualifies this testimony. It's not because of his requirement of two witnesses. One witness would be enough. But he has a principle called Lememra. Again, we'll read it inside. Rabbi Yehuda, Chayish Legomlin. Those are the two words. Chayish Legomlin. Chayish means he's afraid of. And Gomlin means when two people work in cahoots. He's afraid of the following. I'll testify on your behalf if you testify on my behalf. And one good turn deserves another one here and washes another. That's called Chayish Legomlin. So the question is, if you have the place. Yeah, you have the place? Everybody has the place. Your first name is Elio?
Tuvia.
Tuvia. Oh, Tuvia. Sorry, Tuvia. Yeah. So Tuvia, Chayshina Legomlin, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, if I had a blackboard here, I would write this on the blackboard, because for the remainder of the night, we're going to have to remember the following. That it's Rabbi Yehuda who holds Chayshina Legomlin, and we're afraid that each one working in collusion, you know, working in cahoots with each other, agrees, you know, I'll testify on your behalf.
Come on,
one hand washes the other. And the Chachamim say, Lo Chayshinu Legom. We're not afraid of such a cahoots. Each one is a good, solid citizen with a fine record, and he can testify, and he has the status of an objective witness, and therefore he's believed. For Rabbanan Lo Chayshinu Legom. So if we remember that, then we're ready to start the sugya. I'm just going to close the door. We're going to drop more quiet here. And the Gemara says, "Vaha ipcha shaminin luhu." We heard the exact opposite. Now, keep in mind that so far, what we've had is a brisa. Now the Gemara is going to introduce a Mishnah. And if you take a look at the Mesoras HaShas, he points out in Os Gimel that this Mishnah is a Mishnah in the fourth parak of Demai. Now, what's Demai? So let's just review the basics. The Torah says that when you cut down the wheat or the barley, whatever, the five grains, and it becomes tevel, which means you're not allowed to eat it until you separate trumos umasros. And the maser is one-tenth. That's given to the Levi. Now, if I buy produce from someone, and that someone is not what's called a chaver, in other words, he has no reputation, he hasn't proven himself to be meticulous about the laws of Trumas and Maestras, then he's called an Amaretz. He's called a person who's not reliable. We don't know for sure that he took off Trumas and Maestras. And even if he says he did, we have doubts as to whether or not to trust him. And in such a case, the status of that produce is called Demai. Demai means we don't know what it is. And the Rabbanon instituted a takana that you're not allowed to eat Demai without taking off the maser, because we're not going to rely on this seller, this Amoretz, who's selling you produce, and we're not going to assume that he for sure took off Truma and maser. So that's called Demai. Now, suppose two people come to sell their produce, and in each case, it's an Amoretz, so what he's selling you is therefore Demai. Of course, I don't really want to take off maser if I can get away with it, but on the other hand, the halacha is that you can't eat demai. But what happens if amongst these two people, each one testifies about the other one that he took off maser? Yeah. So the two ways are going. One way to say is, well,
Cheshina
Legomlin, meaning that we have to suspect that maybe they were in cahoots, you know, one good turn deserves another. You testify on my behalf and I'll testify on your behalf. Or Lo Cheshina Legomlin, and we can trust each witness to testify about his friend that he indeed was Mafra's Shumas Amai. So that removes the Isur Demai. Now, if these guys are in cahoots, then presumably each one will testify that the other one, that he took off maser. But what happens if one of them says, you know what, I didn't take off maser, but he did. And it's like he's a better Jew than I am. So he's really downplaying or downgrading his produce, and he's upgrading his friend's produce. Now, if they were working in cahoots and they're both a bunch of liars, then each one would have built up his produce. The very fact that Reuven says, well, my produce is Demai and it needs Hafrasha, but Shiva, my buddy, he was Mafresh Maser, that seems like we should rely on him. Or should we say, no, that was also part of the cahoots here,
the
you
next
know?
Town.
Right, in the next town over, they'll switch it around. You know, right now in this neighborhood, you testify, you know, on my behalf, and then in the other town, I'll testify on your behalf. So again, what we're going to see here is Mukhlefes Hashita, that all of a sudden the names change. And Rabbi Yehuda, who in the Braisa was of the opinion that Cheshina Legomlin, and we can't trust Reuben and Shimon when they testify mutually, reciprocally about Kahuna. So here it's going to turn out that Rabbi Yehuda will accept the testimony, this mutual reciprocal testimony, and he's not Cheshina Legomlin. Whereas the Chachamim, who are generally speaking not Cheshina Legomlin, here in this case they are going to be Cheshina Legomlin. That's going to be the main topic for tonight. So let's read it inside. So the Gemara asks, "Vaha ipcha shamina lahu." We have a Mishnah in Masechet Demai, where just the opposite, Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about Gomlin, and the Rabbanan are choshesh leGomlin, and that's going to be a problem for us. Tisnan, we learned in the Mishnah, Hachamorim are tvua sellers. They sell their produce, and they. Why is it called Chamorim? Because they used to use the donkeys as the beast of burden to transport their produce on the backs of these animals. And two of these guys, Nichnasu Le'ir, came into the city to sell their tvua. The Omar Echad Mihem, one of them says, Shalich Chadash V'shel Chaveri Yashan, we'll explain that in just a minute. And then he continues and he says, Shali eino mesukan, meaning it's still in a state of tevel before truma and maaser was removed. Vishal chaveri mesukan, but my friend already took off trumas and maasers. So he's testifying to downgrade his produce and upgrade his friend's produce. And in this case, the Chachamim say, Eino Neman, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Neman. Everything is topsy-turvy, because here the Chachamim maintain the position that Chayshino Legomlin, that we're afraid that these two guys are working in cahoots and we can't trust them, which is exact opposite of the case of Cohen, where the Chachamim say that each one is believed on his friend. And Rabbi Yehuda here, in the case of Tvuah, is going to believe both of these people, and he's not Choshish Legomlin. So we skipped a few words. Let's go back to the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah says that Hachamorim, these are the sellers, Shenichnasu Le'ir, they came into the city, and they're selling their produce. Amar Echad Mehem Shali Chadosh. Now, the process of grinding grain down to make flour requires a period of waiting, of delay between the harvest and the drying of the grain. The grain in its original natural state after it's cut down from the ground is very wet, it's moist. And you can't take moist grains and bring it to the mill to do what's called tchina, to grind them until they're dried out completely. So nobody wants to buy grains at a full price if they're going to have to wait and delay the process of converting it into flour. So they really want to get the grain that's old, so to speak. In this case, old wine, or shall we say old grains, is good grains. So this first fellow says, Shali chadash, mine is not really worth that much. It doesn't pay to buy it at this point until after the process of drying it out. It's premature to buy it. It's too fresh and moist to bring to the mill, grind, and make it into flour. But Vishal Chaveri Yashan, but he's got the good stuff. Pay a higher price for his grains. Now again, it's not clear to me why the buyer can't just check out the goods and figure out whether it's moist and fresh or whether it's dry and old. Maybe because it's already wrapped up and it's already packaged, or maybe because it's too much of a hassle. I don't know.
That easily determined. You need the.
It's not determined. That's the bottom line.
No, I'm saying it's not easily determined. You need the merchant to tell you.
You couldn't just stick your hand.
That's for sure. It's not easily determined. Why it's not easily determined, I don't know. But that's the bottom line.
And is all these cases they're entering a Bezdin to?
No, Nichnosu Le'ir. They came into the city, and now the people who want to buy this grain, they come to the Bezdin, or they come to their local Orthodox rabbi to ask them, what's the status of this Tvuah? So again, if they're making a monetary decision as buyers, they want to know, am I paying the right price for this merchandise? Then that's more of a gzela issue, meaning that's an onah issue. You know, that's an issue of, you know, you want to pay the fair price. But the part of the Mishnah in Demai that occupies our mind tonight is the next part. Shel chaveri shali eino mesukan, my tvua needs hafrasha, meiser was not removed, but the shel chaveri, but my buddy mesukan, his tvua has already been subject to maser, and therefore, again, that upgrades the value of the tvua. And now we have a double shaila. Number one, should we be paying a higher price for his friend's tvua based on the first guy's testimony? In other words, I'm not being cheated if I pay a higher price because maser was already removed, and I don't have to take off 1/10. And number two, on a halachic iser v'heter level, forget about the monetary value and paying the right price, I have a shaila as to whether or not I can eat this tvua, grind it and make it into flour and eat the bread. Maybe it's tevel, maybe it's tvua from which masros wasn't taken off. After all, this guy, the second guy, we'll call him Shimon, he's not believed to testify about his own tefuah, but on the other hand, he brings in Reuven to testify about his tefuah. Reuven should be believed as an objective witness. And the Mishnah says, in the name of the Chachamim, Eino Neman.
it's a monetary thing anyways, because you can always take off the 10% and then you're getting 10% less grain.
Well, that's true, but let's say, for example, it's already too late to be mafresh. Can I eat the bread, let's say? Again, you have to know the halacha until what point you can be mafresh or not. In challah, the halacha is that even after it's baked, you can be mafresh. I'm not sure about the halacha in maaser. You know, the maaser has to be on tevuah. So we also have an isur shaila. The question is, what's the chazak of this? What's the chazak of this tevuah that's being sold here? Since it's being bought from an amoretz, l'choretz has a safek, whether it's ma'usar or not, it has the din of demai. But on the other hand, the Torah believes one witness. And yet, paradoxically, to our surprise, the Chachamim say we can't believe one witness in this case. Because what we're suspicious of is...
collusion.
Is collusion, is that the word?
Yeah.
Okay, collusion, I like that word. And that's called Chayshin and Legolin. Maybe they made a collusion between them, they made an agreement between them that, you know, you testify on my behalf, Ruvain, and then Shimon says, I will testify on your behalf when we go down the line and you're about to sell your tefuah to the next neighborhood. So maybe they organize this, they arrange this up front, and therefore the Chacham don't want to believe them. Now, one could ostensibly argue that the reason why the Chacham are so nervous here about Gomlin is because the stakes here are very high. The Iser Maser of Tevel, Iser Tevel without Maser, is a pretty severe Iser. It's what's called a Misa Bidei Shamayim. So we'll see how the story unfolds. Okay. But oddly enough, I'll just finish this. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that Neman, that we're not choshish the Gomlin, that we can accept the testimony of Ruvain on Shimon, and therefore we can buy the Paris of Shimon, and there's no need to be mafresh maser from the Paris of Shimon, because we already have one objective witness on Shimon's behalf, that his tvuah is already mesukon, means it's already takana, you've already rectified it by removing maser. So Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about Gomlin. And that's paradoxical, because Rabbi Yehuda himself is the author, the original author, of the position of Chayshina Legolin in the case of two witnesses that came in to testify about themselves and their buddies, that we are both Kohen. Go ahead, Aaron. The floor is yours.
How is testimony being given in these cases?
Bisurin doesn't require Bezdin. For example, if let's say I shecht an animal.
In the case of the Kohen saying is also not with a Bezdin, that's just, it was going back to the case of the
we don't need Bezdin.
Right, these are not Bezdin.
Yeah, we don't need
Bezdin. Because if any of these are Bezdin, I would imagine that we'd be less concerned with collusion. In other words, that people willing to walk into a Bezdin and...
maybe that would frighten them or something like that.
Right.
I don't know.
All of this testimony,
good svara.
But all of this testimony is not... we're not talking about...
right, but we're talking outside the court, because again, we're dealing with the issue of Eirech HaNem Bisurit.
And what is, that's just...
and Eirech HaNem Bisurit never requires Bezdin.
When you're using the word testimony...
imagine if... wait, I just want to point this out, Aaron. If Eirech HaNem Bisurit would require testimony, imagine this. And I'm talking to younger married couples here. Might not be relevant to the older married couples, but every month you're going to have to schlep your wife into Bezdin to testify that she went to mikvah. That's a little bit embarrassing. It's pretty hassling too. Yeah. Anyway, go. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
So these cases we're talking about where in the marketplace he's just saying this. And
correct.
We're not...
correct. Because Eirecha doesn't require a Haggadah b'Bezdin.
But the question is, can a person rely on what the... and there's the person who's standing.
Not in the case
of... rely on any advertising.
But I'm asking...
not in the case of an Amoritz. We can't rely on the Amoritz, you know.
The guy
on his own tefuah.
The guy who's about to buy the tefuah. That's... we're concerned with that person.
Correct. The buyer cannot rely on the seller, because the seller is an Amoritz. And anything the Amoritz sells you is becheskas d'mai. And to remove that cheskas d'mai, you need the testimony of one aid. And what's being said here by the Chachamim in the Mishnah in Dmai is that that aid cannot show up with another person to sell tefuah,
right,
and they seem to be working in cahoots. And that's called Chayshina Legomlin, which is the sheet of the Chachamim here in this Mishnah in Dmai, which is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda against the Chachamim themselves in the Braisa of Kohen.
You can't be the initiate and the judge too.
Say it again?
You can't be basically the advocate and the judge together. In other words,
correct. When the two people come together,
can't come along and we're going to both be setting. We've both got interests in
separate. Correct. Correct. Something looks suspicious here. They're coming together.
So can you go to the
two guys arm in arm? They're buddies, you know, and they show up from nowhere.
A guy goes and puts up in the Shukasan, Ifrashdi, Chumas Masters, whatever it is, or right, no Urala, whatever. And he doesn't have a heksha. He doesn't have an independent heksha.
So that's why we need a tudat heksha.
Right.
Now, that's true as far as Dmai is concerned. Yeah. Again, I'm not opposed to heksherim, but in case of a restaurant and somebody's selling you a piece of meat, so technically he's believed to say the meat that he's feeding you is kosher, even though he has vested interests. In other words, there's no absolute rule that someone who has vested interests is not believed. A woman who tells you that she went to mikveh, she may have vested interests, but she's believed. Or if I shechted an animal, I'm believed to say that the shechita was a shechita kshera. Here, there's a particular framework or a setup which the Chachamim believe is called collusion, and therefore Chayshin and Legomlin. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, relies on Eid Echa Nen Bisurin. He's not willing to disqualify the Eidus based on Chayshin and Legomlin. And that's a little bit odd, contradicting apparently Rabbi Yehuda's statement in the Braisa, which he says that if it's a question of kahuna, then chayshin and legomlin. So Rabbi Yehuda, on the one hand, seems to say chayshin and legomlin in the case of kahuna, and in the case of truma, meaning of, I should say, maaseh technically, Rabbi Yehuda says we're not chayshin legomlin. So Omer Av Adabar Av Omer Rav, here we have a classical Talmudic structure called Mukhlefes Hashita. We're going to have to switch things around. We're going to have to assume that the transmission is incorrect. Which means that if you have a choice between the text of a Mishnah and the text of a Braisa, which one is more reliable? Obviously, the Mishnah. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi codified it in the Mishnah means that it's reliable. So we're going to take the Mishnah in Dmai, and the Mishnah in Dmai says that in the case of Maser, each one is believed on his friend. Correct? Just one second, let me just work this out myself. So again, in the Mishnah, review the Omer, right. So then, what are we going to say about Kahuna? Because again, if we accept and verify the, or let's say validate the Girsa of the Mishnah, and Rabbi Yehuda's position is lo chayshin and legomlin, then in the case of kahuna, Rabbi Yehuda is going to have to say lo chayshin and legomlin in order to be consistent.
But that's the Mishnah.
Well, the Gemara started with the Mishnah, but then it went on to quote a Brice, I believe. In any event,
it's in the Mishnah itself, in Ksuvos here, that he's saying, in mali kuna lekuna.
Right. Right, so we'll hold on to it. Hold on to that question, just because I want to get the thrust of what's going on. Because I'm going to lose the mathematical calculation. Yeah. So again, just to summarize, at this point in Rav Adabar Avam, a Rav's frame of reference, the assumption is that according to Rav Yehuda, the halacha is lo chayshin legomlin. We know the Rav Yehuda was quoted in the case of Kohanim with regard to their status to eat truma as chayshin legomlin. That's called mukhlefes hashita. That we're going to have to rewrite. We're going to have to change the text. Whereas the Rabbanon, on the other hand, hold in the Mishnah Dmai chayshin legomlin, and therefore in the case of truma, meaning in the case of validating the status of a person as a kohen, we're going to have to assume that we're not going to rely on the testimony of one witness, because we're going to have to apply the principle of chayshin legomlin. Abai omar liolam lo tepuch. Abai says there's no need to switch around the girsa and the braisa. And in truth, Rabbi Yehuda holds chayshin legomlin. We have a question that in Dmai, if we apply the principle of Chayshin Legomlin, which Rabbi Yehuda applies in Kohanim, we should apply it to Tvua, then why does Rabbi Yehuda rely on these two individuals that seem to be in collusion, and again we should be Choshish Legomlin? So the Gemara pulls a move here which is very classic and appears in many different sugyos in Shas, and that is Bidmai Hikilu. What does that mean, Bidmai Hikilu? The Gemara says that in the case of an Amoritz, most likely, meaning your average Amoritz, if you take a pool of 100 Amoratzim, then 60 out of 100, I'm just throwing out a number, but the majority of them will be Mafish Masa. The Chachamim went against the Torah law in this case. The Torah law is we rely on the Rov. And yet the Chachamim say, well, let's create a Suffolk, a doubt, when the Torah never created a doubt. And because the Torah itself relies on Rov, on the majority of Amoratzim who are Mafrish, Trumas, and Maestras, therefore this whole institution of Demai is very limited. It's very low key, and it's not stringent, but rather it's a light kind of Issa. That's called Hikilu. We're going to find a number of Kulos in Demai that we don't find in any other Issa Derabanan. For example, the Gemara says in Masechta Chulin, believe it or not, that an ani, a poor person, is allowed to eat demai. Where do we find that you can feed Isur, something that's prohibited, to an ani simply because he's a poor person? We didn't find that. But the answer is, as the Gemara says in Chulin, Rov Ami Oretz Maasrim Heim, that in truth we believe that he did take out Maasrim. But the Chachamim were Choshesh for a mute. And therefore, what they did was, they created some sort of a chumrah with, again, a lot of built-in restrictions and a lot of kulos. One of those kulos is that in a case where you have the least reliable edus, meaning you have the baseline edus of chayshin legomlin, yet we're going to accept that. All we need is that little bit of evidence to tip the scale in favor of the seller of the Amoritz to assume that he represents the Rov, he doesn't belong to the Miut, to the minority, and he in fact was Mafrish, Trumas, and Maestras. The only problem with Abaye is that he only went halfway. Although he reconciled the contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda in Kahuna, where he's Choshesh Legomlin, and Rabbi Yehuda in Demai, where he's not Choshesh Legomlin, but he didn't whisper a word about the Chachamim. So that's going to be Rav's Kasha, but before we get to Rav's Kasha, let's just think this out on our own. On the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda's logic here is to suspend the disqualification of the Eidus under the law of Chayshin and Legolin in this exceptional case of Dmai, because B'dmai Hikilu. Right. Maybe the Chachamim go the opposite direction. Maybe the Chachamim are going to be more Machmir in Dmai, and the reason for that is because if the Rabbanon are not going to rely on Rov, then what are we left with? What kind of Suffolk do we have here, Rabosai? A Suffolk D'Oraisa of an Isutela. So it could be possible that what Abaye is implying over here is that in the case of Dmai, we can go in one of two directions. One direction is to say, on the contrary, let's be Mekil in Dmai, let's be more lenient because the Torah relies on Rov. And the Chacham are adding an extra Chumrah, but actually the Chacham believe that the Truma and the Maaser was removed. The other way of going it is to say no, that once the Rabbanan are Choshesh Lemiut, they're worried about that silent minority out there that are not Mafrish, Trumas, and Maestras, then we have to be even more Machmir, because then we're left with the Suffolk Tevel. And this could be, perhaps, the question that divides the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, the one in, is saying no, the Rabbanan were not worried so much about the Miut, they wanted a special Chumrah of Hafrashas Dmai, but really Dmai remains a chefzid ha'tera. It's really something that's mutter, just that we want, shall we say, the gavra, the person, should be mafrish, truma, and maaser. Therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, although in general, in situations similar to our situation of the two sellers, we are choshesh legomlin, here, in the case of Demai, we're going to be mekil, and we're going to say we're not choshesh legomlin. Reuven is believed on Shimon and vice versa. The Rabbanan on the other hand took the other approach. They said, but wait a minute. The Rabbanan, when they instituted Demai, what they were worried about is that 40%, or whatever the number is, of Amayar Oretz that weren't Mafrish Masir. And therefore, what we're digging out of the dust here is a real serious suffix of a D'oraisa of Tevel, and therefore we have to be even more Machmir, and whereas in general I'm not going to be Choshesh Legomlin, in this case I will be Choshesh Legomlin.
You have a comment, you're saying
that. So let me just finish one more point. However, in the case of Truma, we're dealing with Truma D'Rabbanan. Now, why are we dealing with Truma Derabanan? So there are many, many different possibilities. One possibility, the simplest possibility, is that Truma requires what's called Bias Kulchem. And that's derived actually from a pasuk that we read just a few days ago in Parsha Shlach. Although there the Parsha is on Challah, but it could be that Truma is very similar to Challah. In the case of Challah, we require what's called Bias Kulchem. That means the entire Jewish community has to be living in Eretz Yisrael. So even if this Truma is in Eretz Yisrael, it's only Derabanan. And that's the issue today, for example. You know, Brian was mentioning before, you go into the shuk and you buy produce, and the guy says he was mafresh truma. Are we dealing with a serious iser of a deraisa of truma? And that would depend upon what the status of Eretz Yisrael is today. Is it bias kulchem? Is it bias rubchem? I think, if I'm not mistaken, that in the last 5 to 10 years, they've determined that most of the Jews on the face of the earth are here in Israel. So if you require bias rubchem and not bias kulchem, then truma might be doraisa today. However, truma is assumed to be derabanan, and certainly in chutzlaretz truma would not be chal at all. There's no truma in chutzlaretz. But be that as it may, the issue of kahuna, therefore, whether it's regard to kriyas haTorah, you know, giving him the first aliyah, whether it's regard to giving him any other kibud, whether it's regard to duchanin, which is also only derabanan, because our nesias kapayim is only a zecher to the real mitzvah of nesias kapayim, which took place in the mikdash. So the worst possible issue would be truma, and if truma today is derabanan, then it's not as severe as maser. Now you have to ask your question: why would maser be more chomer than truma?
Right.
So for that, we'd have to learn a little bit more Zroim, because that really requires Yedia Gedola in Zroim.
Right. It doesn't sound that convincing because you're saying Truma, you're comparing the Truma, saying that that's Derabanan and Demai is Deoraisa. In other words, that's basically the distinction.
Well, I wouldn't say Demai is Doraisa. I mean, don't accuse me of saying that. What I'm saying is the Rabbanon gave the din of a Safek Doraisa to
right.
Demai. It's only been a Rabbanon.
No, but you could say you should be saying Safek Doraisa by the Truma as well. I mean,
well, Truma again is we're talking about Truma the Rabbanon, because we don't have Bias Rubchem or we don't have Bias Kulchem, whatever it might be. There may be all sorts of conditions in Truma that aren't that haven't been met yet. I mean, for that, you have to open up the Ram Hilchus Beis HaBechira. Yes. Tuvia.
Yes.
Yeah, Tuvia.
Demai, are you referring to...
Say it again?
When you're saying Demai, are you referring to a doubt about whether Truma has been taken or whether Masa?
Masa. Mostly Masa.
Not Truma?
Truma is only... Truma is Chita Achas Poter Sakri. In other words, in the case of Truma, the barest minimum is sufficient to remove the Issa Tevel of Truma. So we're not Choshesh the Amoretz necessarily that he wouldn't be Mafish Truma. He doesn't suffer such a financial loss. But in the case of Maser, when we're dealing with 10%, that's a little bit more serious. And certainly the Amoretz is tempted not to be Mafish Maser. And that's why, in fact, a sizable proportion of the people did not go ahead in Mafish Maser. In any event, Amar Rava, Rava says, wait a second, Abai. The Rabbi Yehuda kasha, the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan lo kasha. Well, you're only answering the question as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned. That is a contradiction you've reconciled. But what about reconciling the contradiction between the Rabbanan and the Rabbanan? Because again, let's review. The Rabbanan in the case of Demai Achoshesh Ligomlin, and yet in the case of Truma, the Chachamim say, Lo chayshin in legom. Ella, therefore, the Rabbi Yehuda, lo kasha kiddushanina. Rava says, I'm going to take what you said, Abai, but I'm going to add another element to it in order to reconcile the Rabbana. So again, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, Rava has no, he has no peeves with Abaye. He's willing to accept Abaye's reconciliation. And that is that Rabbi Yehuda is going to be Mekil and Dmai, even though as a universal principle, Chayshin and Legomlin. And Rabbi Yehuda, because of the kul and dmai of Rov Amiaretz Masrimahim, is going to suspend the principle of Chayshina Legomlin and in replace it with Eid Echonem Bisur. However, in the case of establishing someone as a Kohen, there we're going to be more Machmir, and Rabbi Yehuda is going to apply the principle of Chayshina Legomlin, which, by the way, would make a lot more sense if Truma's Min HaTorah. Now, Drabbanan ad Drabbanan. How do we reconcile the contradiction of Rabbanan on Rabbanan? So before we go on, I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction to make life easier for ourselves, hopefully. And we're going to have to get back to a sociological phenomenon that we're perhaps totally unfamiliar with. But this was the sociology back in the time of Chazal, in the time of the Gemara. There's a way of determining, it's almost like a flag, if the seller is interested in selling his produce now or later on. Again, the language of the Gemara is klei umnaso biyado. But before we even interpret that, I just want to put it into a framework, a conceptual framework. What is this whole business about klei umnaso biyado? You recall that when the seller comes in, he would like to sell his produce as dry and old, as we said, meaning it's matured, it's developed, it's ready for grinding and making it into flour. Did he put up a sign for sale? If he has not yet put up a sign for sale, then you know what? There's reason to suspect that he's not ready yet to sell his produce. Perhaps it hasn't matured yet. It's still moist, it's fresh, and it's not ready for grinding. So this is what Rabbi Chama Bar Ukva came up with in a different context, which the Gemara is going to explain in just a minute. The original context in which Rabbi Chama Bar Ukva came up with this sign, so to speak, for sale sign, immediate purchase. And Rava in our Gemara is going to borrow from Rabbi Chama this principle, which is called, and again these are the last three words on your page, Bishaklei Umnoso Biyod. Now what this means is the following. When you buy produce, you buy it volume. And what that means is that the seller is going to weigh a certain amount. Like, let's say, for example, I guess every country is different, but let's say I want to order 2 bushels worth, right? So what happens is the seller has to prove that the amount that he's selling you, you know, this basket of produce weighs exactly that amount. And now, again, he's operating both on behalf of the lokeh, the buyer, and on behalf of himself, because he wants to make sure he's not giving you too much at that price. And he wants to calm down the buyer, that the buyer is not getting too little, and the sale is fair. So what he does is, he brings to the table what's called klei umnasa. These are kalim, these are instruments which are used in the process of sale. And basically what happens is he's got the produce here, and immediately contiguous to his produce, like a flag, he has his klei umnos, these vessels which he uses to measure out. And now we turn to Amid Beis. So this is a principle which we'll see in a minute in its original context of Rabbi Chama. Rava is borrowing it here. That's called Hachinami. Let's apply that here in the case of 2 friends, we'll call them, sellers, who came into the city, and one is praising the quality of the other's tvua, the other's produce. It's Bishaklei umnaso biyado. Now let's give these two guys names. Reuven is the one who's talking right now. Okay? And he's telling us that Shimon is bringing in tefuah that's ready to sell, meaning it's matured, it's dried, etc., etc. Okay.
And metukan.
It's metukan. Now, if so, again, we're trying to explain now the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan are going to say what? The Rabbanan are going to say chayshin elagom in this case of the sellers, correct? I, the Rabbanan, are the ones who maintain lo chayshin elagomlin. Says Rava, this is the exception. This is a case where chayshin elagomlin. Why? Because once the seller has announced, in quotation marks, that he is selling his goods, then at that point, let me just read to you the language of the Rambam, which I have here in the footnote. He says that, just one second, where did I put it? I thought I had it underlined, just give me a second here. He says that Ein hatvua omedes lehatznia, ela hi omedes lemochra. What does this mean? There's something called lehatznia, and there's something called lemochra. Lehatznia means to put it away, put it into storage, and postpone the sale. Correct? That's called lehatznia. When did the Rabbanan have a chashash legomlin? When the tvua, says the Rambam, is eina omedes latznia. How do we know that the tvua is eina omedes latznia? Because the mocher, as we said before, put up the sign that it's for sale. Meaning he's hoping, he's anticipating that there'll be a buyer to come along and immediately purchase it.
And that sign is the Kli Umnoso.
What is that sign? The sign is Kli Umnoso Biyado. So again, I don't know if in our day we have this Kli Umnoso Biyado, but maybe we have other ways of determining that he's interested in bringing his Tvua Omedes Lemochra to sell it immediately, and he's not interested in Lahatznia. But back in the day, that was the indication. Oh, so now, what's going on over here? There's a tarti desasri. There's A and minus A at the same time. We're getting mixed signals. On the one hand, Reuven is saying that my tvua is not ready for sale. On the other hand, that same Reuven is carrying his clay umnus, which means that the tvua is omedes limacher. What's going on over here? So the chachamim in the Mishnah are trying to reconcile what seems to be a contradiction in his behavior patterns in the signals that he's selling. And they came to the conclusion that the answer to this is chayshin and legomlin. That Elchinami, he's ready and eager to sell his produce, and the only reason he downgrades his produce, he's mezalzel b'shalo, is in order to sort of impress everyone around him that he's telling the truth, so that when his friend testifies on his behalf, they'll believe his friend as well, because his friend is going to pull the same shtick. So in order, it's a little bit like a migu, but if somebody, you know, deliberately organizes a migu, I'm going to say something that works against me, because then you'll trust me, because you'll say, well, if I was a really good liar, I would have said something that works in my behalf. So here what he does is, he actually fabricates a lie by saying that my tefua is not ready for mechira.
When he's actually carrying his bushel containers, correct, to measure it for sale in the next 10.
Correct. And why does he downgrade his own tefua and say it's not ready for mechira? Because then he thinks that'll increase his credibility as far as his friend Shimon is concerned. And then they're going to play the game vice versa as they get to the next neighborhood over or wherever it is. And why did the Chachamim have this specific push and this urgency in this particular case to apply the principle which they reject?
Right.
They reject it as a general rule of Chayshin Legomlin is only because it's Kliyum Naso Biyodo. He's clearly lying through his teeth. Or maybe not so clearly, but it indicates that he's lying through his teeth. He's telling you that his tefuah hasn't ripened yet. It's not ready for sale, for market, and yet he's ready to sell it to you. He's carrying around. He's displaying his Kliyum Naso. He's flagrantly waving the flag. I am willing to sell this right now. Here are my kelim. Please come up to the front of the lawn. Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
But if somebody wants to buy an unfinished product and wait that the 2 months, I mean, you see
it. No, but it all reflects itself, Brian, in the price. He's charging you the higher price of tomorrow, today. Do you follow me? In other words, it's a funny kind of thing. The example I give is wine. Wine will be worth more tomorrow than it is today. And tefuah, when it's cut down from the fields, is worth more tomorrow than it is today. Nobody wants to wait the 2 months, if you follow what I mean. They lose 2 months.
You lose 2 months.
So they want to be reimbursed for that. So it reflects itself in the padding of the... Right. No. He's not offering a discount.
He's not offering a discount.
No, Brian. The whole Yesod HaYesodus of this sugya is that he's charging him on the higher price. That's what...
Charging the same price as his friend.
Correct. He's charging the same price as his friend. He's not going to do that here. He's going to wait till he gets to the next neighborhood over to do that. Correct? But again, what's pressing him here? He wants to make the biggest profit that he can. He doesn't want to settle for a lesser money. And he may even fabricate the truth in order to gain that extra money. So he's going to try to convince
you. I mean, physically, I walk into the store, right? And I say, I've got unfinished product, all right? And I've got a finished product. My friend's got a finished product. Everybody's got about the friend's finished product.
Correct.
And then he goes into the Tzanim Shul and he tries to sell his...
Right, he goes to the next shul and they switch it around.
And they switch it around.
Right. And then Shimon says, my product isn't ready, but Reuven's is.
Right, so it really looks very convincing.
The
average buyer who's very naive, like you and I, are going to trust this because...
I'm a bad example, I'll buy anything.
So that's what I'm saying, that there are a lot of people out there who will buy anything. So what happens is that in this case we believe that the testimony of Reuven is a false testimony. What leads us to that strange conclusion when we have a principle of Eirech and then Bisurin is the fact that there's indication that he really wants to sell it now. Now, why is he telling us that it's an inferior quality and it's not ready to be sold? The answer must be that there's some benefit that he has, some plan that he has, and he's scheming to somehow fool the buyer. And how does he successfully fool the buyer? By downplaying his tefuah, and he knows that his buddy is in the background and he's going to help him down the line.
They're each helping each other.
Correct.
I just don't get the Kliyum Naso. Is that a mistake that he's showing it, and we think that that's...
No, in other words, it works like this. There's something called Tvuah Homedes Latznia.
No, I understand, but what's the clue of the Kli?
So again, let me finish my sentence. I'm exactly answering your question. I know it's hard to believe. There's something called Tvuah She'ena Omedes Lehimacher Ela Latznia. What that means is that you place it in storage. When you place it in storage, you don't carry around with you those measuring rods that are used for determining the price and making sure that he is getting what he's paying for and you're giving what he's paying for. Those kalim, let's just assume for argument's sake they're very heavy, they're very sensitive, it's like a dental, you know, it's what you call in Hilchos Shabbos a muktzah machmas chisaron kiss, meaning you don't play around with these instruments. They're very expensive, they're very fine too.
The fact that he has it out is
the very fact that he's carrying it and it's...
There's something more going on.
Correct, that it's not, as he claims, omedes latznia, that he's really going to put in storage for the next 2 months, as Brian said the example, but that he really wants to sell it immediately. He's just waiting to convince the public that it's ready to be sold, that it's mature and ripened, it's dried and ready to be made into kemach, and that he's going to do a few pesos down the line when he gets to the very next marketplace, when his buddy is going to do for him what he did for the buddy. So this whole fantastical svara of Chayshin and Legomlin is all based on the fact that we have indications that in truth, despite the fact that he says it's Latznia, it's really the Mechira. That's the best I can do. Again, there's a whole...
Can you see loaded, you see loaded on his donkey or on his wagon, you happen to know he's not showing you why, he's not showing you Sima Kalim. Yeah, could even lose. But you know, I happen to notice he's got the Kalim with him.
Okay. So Rabosai, where is this Rabbi Chama? I mean, again, Rav is building on Rabbi Chama, and he's applying it here. Where's the original? So now the Gemara gives us a little bit of a limud, if we haven't done enough of Zroim, of Taros. But that's the nature of Shas Bam. The Hecha Itmar de Rabbi Chama Bar Ukva, where is the original statement of Rabbi Chama Bar Ukva? So the Gemara says, Ahad Isnai. And again, if you look in the Mesoras HaShas, you'll see that this is a Mishnah in the 7th Perek of Taros. Now, Rabosa, I don't know when the last time you learned Taros was, but I'm not going to tell you how many years ago I learned Taros, because that, then I'd be giving away my next birthday. But we're going to try to do the best we can, if you pardon the pun, with the tools that we have. Hakadar. Now, what happens is that they have these, you know, these professional jug makers. You know, they take clay. You've seen pictures of it. If you haven't seen it, actually, there's a place that you know, if Kadvachomer, yeah, a place if you've been dating recently, you know, depending on your age, then you probably took your date to Kadvachomer. It's a nice change of pace on a date, you know, take a girl to Kadvachomer. It's a little distraction, you know. They don't go to movies anymore, you know. I'm not going to tell you what we did when we went dating, but today movies are absolutely out of bounds, you know. So what do you do with a date, you know, other than sitting in a lobby? Gets a little boring after a while. The most exciting dating for Haredi couples today is going for a walk. Could you imagine that? But truth be told, I have to tell you, even in my day, dating was pretty boring. We used to go to a hotel lobby, and I once shocked a girl because I brought cookies along. She was floored by that. Because you can't eat anything in these hotels. You know, you go to the fancy hotels in Manhattan, and you pay a bomb of money for a cup of water, you know, if you're lucky you get Pepsi or a Coke. And that's about it. Even the peanuts are a question. No. Okay, somehow there's a phone that keeps going off, and I would just ask your permission if you don't mind my shutting it off, but you have to pass the phone to me. All right. So we're talking about a kador. So what is a kador doing? He's creating these, what's called kli cheres, these chinaware, which he sells in the shuk, he sells out in the marketplace. And what we're talking about now in this Mishnah is what's called a chaver, as opposed to an amoritz. Now, back in the day, the issue of chaver versus amoritz was relevant not only to Zroim, as we discussed earlier, in Masros, but also to Taros. And the issue is, can we assume that his kalim are becheskas taro? Again, this is back in the day when the issues of Tara and Tumah were very pressing and very relevant. Now, what we assume about a chaver is that he carefully supervises his utensils to make sure that they don't come in contact with Tumah. But then you have to ask yourself the following question. What does it mean he supervises? I'll tell you a story. If you never heard it, I don't know, you probably heard it already. But the Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yoshe Ben Briska, once sent his son Reb Chaim to pick up Shmura Matzah. And when he came back, it was a train ride. So the Briska Rav asked his son, how do you know that these were the matzahs that you bought? Maybe someone switched them on the train. So at that point, Reb Chaim rolled up his what do you call this, the sleeve of his pants. No, not a sleeve, what's it called? The cuff of his pants. And he showed his father that there were red lines in his skin because he tied the matzahs so tightly down to his body that it started bleeding, in order to convince his father that nobody swapped this matzah with the other. So if you're not a brisker, you won't appreciate that story. In any event, this Mishnah in Masechta Taros is almost like a brisker Mishnah. And what it says is that a chaver has to leave no you know, how should I say, no stones unturned. He has to be, no hesek hadas, he's got to be totally dedicated to supervise his kelim and make sure that they don't come in contact with tumah. But the problem is that it's very difficult 24/7 to continuously guard your kelim. So there are going to be scenarios in which he leaves his kelim unattended, and now we have to ask the objective question, did anyone come along and contaminate his kelim? So what's the case? He niach kidei rosov, he left his vessels, and yarad lishtos mayim. Again, you know, he's going through some dry, arid territory, and he needs to drink water. So he goes to the Ya'ar. He goes down to the river, which has fresh water, to drink water. And in the interim, he leaves his kederos in a place which might be exposed to the public. And in that short period of time when he was not supervising his utensils, and therefore he has no guarantee that no one came along who was tameh and picked up his kederos, his vessels, is what do we do now? And this question is even relevant to the owner of the kederos himself, to the chaver himself. So the Mishnah in Taros makes the following distinction. There are some vessels that are right up front, which are accessible to anyone who's walking on the road. Those are called the chitzonios. And then there are vessels behind them that are not directly exposed to the ovrei drachim, to the ovrei arabim. Those are called the pnimios. And the percentage, statistically, of contamination is that much greater in the case of the chitzonios than it is in the pnimios. And therefore, since the kli has what's called a cheskas tahara, therefore pnimios, with regard to those kelim that are on the other side, therefore we can assume tahoros. It's not, generally speaking, going to happen that the people who are walking will come in contact with these kelim. And keep in mind that a kadar is, and maybe we missed this point before, I just want to emphasize this, he's not only the creator of these kelim, he not only manufactures them, but he also brings them to the market to sell them. Okay? Because you could have imagined that there's a middleman here, but there's no middleman. So he is both the manufacturer and the wholesaler. You know, he's up front, the retailer, I guess you'd say, he's up front selling them. So what does he do? He leaves these kadarim as he goes down to the water to drink, and there are those that are up front. Those are called the chitzonios. And then there are the pnimios. Now, what happens is when the buyers come by, they want to check out the merchandise. They want to look and see, hold the kli in their hands and see if they want to buy it. Does it have any blemish? Is it perfect or imperfect? So therefore, we have to assume in this case that as far as the chitzonios in the outer circle, that borders on the shuk, where the ovrei drachim go, the ovrei arabim go, tmeos, because we assume the possibility that one of the people who went by was not necessarily a chaver, he was someone who contracted tumah, let's say he ate nevela, or, no, that I shouldn't say he ate nevela, because that he wouldn't do, even Amoris wouldn't eat nevela, but let's say he walked into a hospital, and there was a mess in the hospital, and therefore he contracted tumah's mess, so whatever tumah he contracted, he may have stepped on a sheretz, I don't know. So in that case, the chitzonios are tmeos. Now, where did Rabbi Chama step into the picture? Rabbi Chama is obviously an Amora, he's not a Tana. And the answer is that he came to reconcile what seems to be a contradiction between the Mishnah in Taros that we just learned, and a Bryce. Of Latanya, we have a Bryce that says, Eilu v'eilu tmeos, that even the pnimios are also likewise tmeos. Omar Rami bar Rabbi Chama bar Ukva b'shekli umnaso biyod. What does that mean? Normally, the potential buyers who are coming in the marketplace to check out the vessels and the merchandise, they limit themselves to the chitzonis, because the premise is that it's not like today where you go into a store so you get to see the pnimius. In those days, it was kind of like an outdoor vendor, and the assumption was that the buyers would go to those vessels that were displayed on the outside. Those were for sale. And the seller, after he exhausted, he sold all the chitzonios, then, and only then, would he begin to sell the pnimius. This case, says Rabbi Chama in the Braisa, is an exceptional case where the seller put up a sign, again I'm using that as a metaphor, that I'm selling even the pnimios. What was that sign that indicated that publicized that he's selling even the pnimios? It was clay umnaso biyado, which means, that's how Rashi interprets this, that those particular kalim that he uses for measuring were left contiguous to the vessels that are on the inside, and the conjoining or the contiguity, if there's such a word, between the clay umnus, which are clay mechira, and the pnimios, was a message being sent to the public that even the pnimios are on sale. I don't know if you've ever bought an esrog at the market. So a lot of people think that, you know what, show me the stuff that you have in the boxes, you know, behind because they assume that the stuff that you're putting out, that's not the fresh, good stuff. So when he left his clay umnus, right, he left his clay umnus liyad hakderos, right, when he went down to the water, then the assumption was that the kederos are for sale, and mipnei shaik Sheyad hakol v'mashmeshes for him. Now everyone wants to check the merchandise. They pick it up, and with that contact, they mitame it. So now the Gemara says we have another brisa, just to complicate matters. Well, Sani, we have a brisa that says elu v'elu tahoros, that even the chitzonios are tahoros. Amar Rami Chama Bar Ukva B'she'ein Klei Umnaso B'yado. Here, there's nowhere to be found the sign that we're looking for that's for sale, and therefore the Ovrei Derech don't even entertain the possibility of checking out the merchandise. Nothing's for sale. It's almost like he has a sign that says went out for Mincha, but nothing's for sale. You know, do not enter. Or sometimes you'll see in a Sefer it says Also L'shtamish B'Sefer Zeh. I mean, when I was a kid, when we bought a sefer, the first thing we did was we wrote Lamed Hei Vav.
What's it?
Lashem Ha'aretzu Meloah, which means use my sefer, I'll be happy if you use it. But today, it's Osel L'shtamesh B'sefer Zeh. And if he's very liberal and very magnanimous, he'll write Osel L'hotzi Sefer Zeh Bimkomo or something, meaning you could use it in the makom, but don't dream of taking it outside. So the fact that he omitted his clay umnus, which again is the sign I'm ready to sell, indicates that this is not for sale. He's just putting it down on a very temporary basis till he gets his drink of water and he's coming right back. So now we're in trouble. Why? Because l'chora, the law of the excluded middle now comes to the fore. Mimarashach. What's going on over here? Either we should say that both the chitzonios and the pnimios are tmeos, or we should say both the chitzonios and the pnimios are tahoros. But to split between the chitzonios and the pnimios, so the Gemara says, what's that case? The Elohadisnan, but what about the mission that we began with in the second parak of Taras that we're dealing with? Hapnimios tahoros vachitzonios tmeos, heichim ishkachasle. So the Gemara assumes, which is a little bit different than what I was assuming, that where are these clay umnaso? Wherever they are, they indicate that everything is for sale. And therefore the Gemara is asking, how do we have such a case? No matter how you slice the cake, it's either that everything is tmeos or everything is tahoros. Either they are clay umnaso or they're not. And the Gemara answers, there's another variable that plays into this equation, and that is not just the buyers, but simply people who are walking on the road. Okay, now let's see what happens with the people walking on the road. They're not interested in buying the vessels. but rather the smicha l'shus harabim u'mishum chifufei l'shus harabim. Now, what's chifufei? Now, usually, yeah, usually what you have is chifufim. What is chifufim? You see it even here in Israel. I see it every day back and forth when I walk from my apartment here to the LC. Chifufei are those small pillars. What would you call them in English? You know, they put it there so that no one will park their car or walk too close. Poles. We'll call them poles, okay, for that lack of a better word. In the Gemara's language, they call
it. Like the Yantatir is the pillar by the bus stops.
Yeah, something like that. Now they're using it for security reasons because of
you see it happening when someone wants to keep a parking for his buddy. Puts the dustbins in the road. You know.
So in this case, what's happening is a lot of the vendors are afraid that the people walking down Rosh Hashanah Rabim will inadvertently, with their wagons and whatever they're traveling with, will somehow break their, you know, endanger their merchandise. So what they do is they put up these chifufei, and these chifufei are meant to keep people away from the Rosh Hashanah Rabim. But as a result, again, I don't know if these chifufei got the permit from the municipality or not, but as a result, they're really stealing some of the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, because if they're chifufi on this side and chifufi on this side, there's not that much room for people to go through Rosh Hashanah Rabim. So what did this particular chaver do? He put his kederos samuch smicha l'Rosh Hashanah Rabim. He put it in a place that's very close proximity to the Rosh Hashanah Rabim. U'mishum chifufi. Now, what does chifufe mean? Chifufe means that the people walking in the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, what they do is they come very close to these poles, and derech b'nei adam linotz b'tzidei Rosh Hashanah Rabim samuch l'kosel ha'yisedos. They come with their agalot, their wagons, and they come really, really close to the sides of the Rosh Hashanah Rabim on both sides till they get stuck by hitting up against these yisedos, against these chifufe. And what they're doing is, as a result of these chifufei, there's a very narrow area, just give me a minute, in which the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, the people in Rosh Hashanah Rabim are able to break through and travel from here to there. This person, this chaver, what he did was he left his kederos exactly at the point of these chifufei. And as a result of the fact that there were so many people walking into Rosh Hashanah Rabim, they inadvertently rub up against the kederos that are left right next to these chifufei. And as a result, now Rashi here says something that's very odd. Rashi says that there's a what's called a mahil. Mahil means when the begadim sort of cover over the avir, the kelim. But that's not to be taken literally, because there's no tumas oil here, except in the case of a mess. And we're not talking about a dead body here. So basically what we're talking about, that the begadim that are being worn by the Ami Aretz, you know, the citizens of the town who are walking through the Shusha Rabin, they are tmeim, and therefore they come in contact with the kederos that are very close to the chafufe. That's called smichel and Shusha Rabin. And as a result of the contact between the begadim of the Ami Aretz who are walking through the Shusha Rabin and the kederos that are laid down there in the point which is very close to the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, and because of the dochak, meaning that there's so much traffic, that heavy traffic walking through the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, there's going to be inevitably a contact between the begadim of the Ami Aretz who are walking through the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, which are begadim b'cheskes tuma, and the kederos. But which kederos, Rabbi Osai? The chitzonios. Okay, now I'm ready to hear what you say. I just had to, work this out in my head. So what time is it? Do we have one more minute? Maybe we'll have to open the door here. Okay, to hear if they're ready for Meiriv. Because once they get ready for Meiriv, you know, it's they don't give us much time to... Alright, let's end here. I'll tell you why, because this is a perfect place to end. At this point, the Gemara is going to reinterpret the whole story of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanon as to the case of two so-called Kohanim who are testifying one on behalf of the other, and why Rabbi Yehuda objects to believing the testimony of the Kohen on behalf of his colleague. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone well. Next Wednesday, I'm in a different part of the world. and the Wednesday after that are on a plane coming back to this part of the world. So for the next two Wednesdays, I won't be available.
God's willing, come, I'll do the stuff.
Okay. All right, then.
Thank you, Rabbi. Have a good show.
Yeah, thanks.